Boot Camp in Miami Beach, Florida. This is the Power Hour. Welcome. Hello, everybody. This is, I think, Power Hour 249 or 250. So that's a long bunch of them there. Let me go off this thing for a second. So if you're new here, welcome. There is going to be a link for Wings credit. We're not sure if they approved it. If not, you won't get it. But we're going to collect the emails anyway. Like last time, we did was approved, so we're able to do that. So there's that. So that'll be in the chat later. So always look in the chat for things. That's what really where we want to be. Okay. Let's see. Chat's going up here. I need to put that up one. So we're going to do a forum today. That should be fun. Look at that. That'll be fun. And everything, if you want to communicate, best to do that in the chat. That's the easiest way to do it. Everybody always say where they're from sometimes in there in the beginning, and then they have specific questions, and we can look at those at the end. Now, I didn't tell anybody because I didn't really have a particular format in terms of questions, but I think everybody on a panel will be able to answer the questions quite easily. So, you know, in there, because it's just based upon experience and observations. So I'll start by first just saying who the people are in the panel. So there's me. There's Dorothy Chick. She's the admin for CFI study group, a Facebook group, which is worth joining. She'll talk about that a little bit. There's Greg Brown. He's an author and has some books out. He also used to write for AOPA magazine, and he has a podcast. Greg's flying carpet. You got Rex, who helps with our CFI, Clarick Scholl, and he's a glider instructor as well as a fixed wing. He also has his lights or has his repairman certificate for sport aircraft. So that's pretty handy. So we can talk about a variety of topics. We can, but so that's kind of the idea of it. Then what I wanted to do was sort of to take on some of the things that maybe I see first as things that I find are problems, because one of the reasons I joined the CFI study group, I had secret motives. The motive, there's now since passed, so that's good, right? But it's a point where you can see what people are asking. And because when people ask things, it's because it's coming from a source of pain for them usually. Like, how do I do this or how do I do that? What's this mean or what's that mean? And so after a period of, you know, quite a while of being in there and listening to people, and seeing posts, it started occurring to me that there are certain things that in CFI training that are lacking, and also things that are part of the CFI training process that just don't get taught. And so I think what happens is we end up teaching people if you don't find the right instructor for this, which means someone who does this, who knows how to do this, not just someone who dabbles at it every once in a while. This is a very boutique type training. You know, it's you have to have a lot of knowledge, and it's knowledge that as a regular CFI, you don't have it all the time because you don't do this all the time. So basically what I would say by that would be something like you have to have the nuances of it. Like we say, the regulations whisper to each other, right? Like logging pilot command time, how you solo a student who's not a student pilot. All these are like things, and they're not things a regular CFI does, so they don't know them. And yet, when it comes to CFI training, it's kind of stuff you need to know. So it's kind of this. Also, I have another observation, which is when I go into flight schools, wherever I go, unless it's a 141 school, it's a very rare case that I see someone. I see people doing ground, I see people doing flight, but I don't ever see a syllabus. Very rarely do I see that. And yet it's the first thing that I pull out, and it's my roadmap. And so this doesn't seem to get taught either, because a lot of the posts that I saw would be things like, okay, I finished my CFI. Good. Passed the test. Okay. Excellent. What do I do now? Like, what do I use these lesson plans for? That's kind of the question, right? And it seemed to me that big gap in training. And so that's one of the issues I wanted to take on. We took on last time, we talked about having abnormal students who it was a rare bird that we said we would have one, but we could we occasionally will have one if you in it long enough, probably, you know. And I was chief pilot of a big 141 school, so I saw more cases than most. But as a regular instructor, what do you do about that? That's some things. And then I thought that each one of these people have really good insight into their own observations So I thought that maybe it would be just be think about like what you think are lacks or things that we could do better at, how we might do better at them, those kind of things. So it doesn't have to be topic specific. It can be whatever you want to say. But I think I said my piece in terms of this. But here's what I think. This is one of the things I tell our CFI class. And this is I think where the rubber hits kind of the road for me in terms of training is that my job is to do, I've got two jobs, two main jobs. The number one, assuming everything's safe and you're set, all that kind of stuff, right? My first job is to see that you can pass this check ride, right? Because we've got to have a win for you, or you're not going to, there's no reason for you to show up, right? The second thing is I have to make you operational. Well, what does that mean? That means that I have to teach you how to take someone who walks through the door of a flight school, isn't that from zero? And get all the training, all the endorsements, all of what you have to do, all that, until they're sitting in front of a DPE for the private pilot check ride, qualified for the test. You have to do all the pieces from zero to there, and so that's where the syllabus comes in, and a roadmap of how we get there, right? So not only do I if I just had an accelerated CFI program, and I didn't really care, I could get you to pass the CFI test. Because I would know the DPE and I would know what's on the test for pretty much. And the stuff maybe he asked out of the blue would be some wiggle room for you if it were a nice DPE. And so you could pass the test and not really know a lot. I mean, a huge amount. You wouldn't. So the depth of your knowledge might not be that great. So, but that's not my intention. So that's what I see in the training. I also see one last thing, then I'll get to each of our people, is, I see that people have a lesson plan. They either made them or they've bought them, and we provide our own to our people. And I see that they ask me questions like they ask questions like this. They say, on the lesson plan, why doesn't it show me how to teach something? Why does it just an outline? Why is it not teaching me how, showing me what I should teach? Well, because teaching, that's the art, right? That's where you come in. So the lesson plan is a complete guide to say this is what would be a complete lesson on this topic, an outline. And then you have to craft that lesson around the individual learner or classroom. That's your job. So no one can teach you how to do that. You have to observe that. And you have to see your learners and have an idea of their background, know if they came perhaps from a flying family. Maybe they're a slow learner. Maybe they're a really fast learner. Maybe they're a visual learner, kinesthetic, audio. Yeah, I don't know, right? Until we start how they learn. I need to know all those things before I can make a lesson for you. I'll use the lesson plan. I can use the guide, but imagine this. Imagine if I have a student who we're going to do steep turns. I always give a steep turn example. And it's a brand new learner who's never taken a ground school. Well, I probably use my check ride style lesson plan, big long thing, right? What about a person who's taken a ground school concurrently, or we've done a ground lesson on it previously? Well, my lesson on a steep turn is going to be different. It's going to be a pre-flight briefing. It's just going to be, this is how you do it. Any questions? Right? And maybe if it's a flight review, my lesson on steep turns, because I selected it, is going to be to ask you something like this. How long has it been since you've done a steep turn? If they say 30 years, we're probably going to have a little bit of a review. But if they say, oh, last 2 years when I did a flight review, I did them. Okay. So the way which I would approach that and teach you that lesson is going to be different in all those cases. And I think this gets completely lost. And what we get is we see CFIs who are delivering lessons just like it was a check ride, except for in Part 141 schools where we don't let you do that. And we say you've got to do a pre-flight briefing. And that's all you get to do. You don't get to do any ground. You get pre-flight briefing, post-flight briefing, academics takes care of the rest. So that's where I am with where the state of training is. And I think a lot of it just gets diluted. So I don't know. I just asked Dorothy, what do you see? And whatever you want to say about anything.
Okay. All right, great. So for my particular part is setting up expectations. So if you're a Part 61 flight school or you're an individual independent CFI at a flying club, you have to set expectations in the very beginning. We might refer to it as onboarding. And that's where you set the tone of what you're expecting. From what you're going to give as an instructor and what you're expecting from your learner. Right. And I don't care if it's a big, zero time person or commercial pilot coming to you from another school. Those parts of that is also part of the here's what we're going to do for a syllabus. Here's what we're going to expect you to do. Here's what the costs are if you haven't already gone over that. So it starts right at the very beginning. And I guess what I see is some independent flight instructors just winging it on that. It's like, oh, they didn't know it was going to cost this much. Or, oh, they didn't understand that we're going to do ground. Or, oh, how many of us have heard other CFI in training or CFI say, I never got any ground. So, I mean, literally, like my instructor just jumps up and goes into the airplane. And that's what we do. As we all know, it's a horrible place to have a training session inside of an airplane. So that's where I come from because I was a small business owner and I really saw the need for and value for my clients of understanding what's going to happen, tell them what's going to happen, you tell them again what's going to happen, and then you ask them to be part of that team.
Okay. And what in terms of your ex what is like something that you see that doesn't get that in the CFI study group, because you moderate that pretty well. So what are the big things that you think people are really in CFI training are asking? What the things I said, I know that because I saw those. Anything else that you kind of see that we could be doing a better job on or something like that?
Sure. So as you said, the questions that come up, the real life questions that come up, like one just came up today from one of the in the CFI study group, and that question is pretty good example of what you see missing in CFI training. What do I mean by that? The question was, let me read it to you. I can get it here. A great question. Hey, I have a question in regard to endorsements. So it's my understanding that if I give my student a 6187N endorsement for my initial for their initial solo, that they can solo and practice maneuvers that I train them with that I train with them. My question is, if I give them the 6193B1 repeated takeoff and landings to a specific airport within 25 nautical miles, can they go practice maneuvers in the practice area too?
Good question.
Good question. It's a thoughtful question. Wait a minute, but read right. So how do we miss that in our training of CFIs?
Yeah, that's why it's a good so Dorothy has a CFI study group on Facebook. She's one of the admin there, and it's a good place to ask those kind of questions. And there's people in there who can give the answers. And we always like you to give your references so that it's not just opinion based, right? Oh, I would do this, or I would, or I what my instructor did. Those things aren't really that relevant, you know. Okay, that's has experience, at least a little experience behind it, but that's what that is. Okay, let's look at what do I see there? I see Rex. So what do
All
you
right.
obviously hear a lot of people. What do you do? What do you see?
Yeah, so a couple things. Are we talking primarily to CFI initials at our audience today?
It's all
It's
people.
all of them. Okay, great. One thing that I really wanted to highlight there was the use of the syllabus. So I think Dorothy mentioned it, you mentioned it, so I'm going to mention it as well. But I think the use of the syllabus is imperative. Teaching a student how to use the syllabus, how to use the FAA documents. What is the PHAC? What is the AFH? And I'm probably talking in, if you're a student pilot, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, it's an FAA publication. It's kind of general towards everybody. The Airplane Flying Handbook or the AFH is kind of specific maneuvers or equipment installed in airplanes that aren't installed in other aircraft, et cetera. But teaching you what these documents are, where to find them, and then how to source the documents so it's not just, I'm your CFI. I'm next to God. What's the joke? What's the difference between CFI and God? Even God knows he's not a CFI. So anyway, but instead of and the study group and Greg's group, Greg Brown Student Pilot Pep Talk group, all great groups. And I always like how they go back to the source of the information. It's the administrator, right? The FAA gives us this guidance on how we're supposed to do this and what we're supposed to accomplish. And teaching students It's not because I say so. I say so, but I say so because I'm referencing this document and I want to go to the document with you as well. And so you can see it, you can read it, and you know that I'm doing my job and I'm doing a satisfactory job for you. I see a lot of that with, where you get an instructor and they say, oh, well, I did everything my instructor said, but I failed my check ride. I mean, I do a lot of retraining for people like that. And I'm like, well, sorry, they didn't show you the documents, you know? In my personal training, I didn't even know there was a standard, and I saw it was PTS when I took my private pilot, and I saw it, I think the night before my check ride. I was like, yeah, I
Wow.
was like, wow, here we go. So I think the use of the documents, the standardization, knowing what they are, knowing which ones are important, where they fit, is required. If you look at several of the regulations for, you know, 105, 107, in 61-105, 61-107, it will talk about, you know, use of various FAA publications, the, you know, the FAR, Federal Aviation Regulation, the AIM, the Aeronautical Information Manual, advisory circulars, etc. So I think that we're doing our students a service when we can show them, okay, these are the documents that the FAA has spent a lot of time to put together, and this is how they want us to use them, and this is how you can use them, and then. And for my students, I make them go and source information from every document so that they're not just being shown it, but they're actually having to use it as part of their course of training.
Is it interesting that one other thing I was thinking about when you were talking there was it's when you listen to someone give a lesson on some anything, a CFI that were is in training, you it's the rare bird that says to me or says, who are you? How do you like to learn? What's your background? What are you? Are you somebody I know that I've been going through, so I kind of already know this already, or you know, where are you? Because they don't ever set how they're going to really deliver this lesson and tailor it towards that, because it seems to be a one size fits all when it comes to and that's why the problem with the check ride. The problem with the check ride is that it is one size fits all in a way. It's you have this lesson plan that had to be detailed and cover absolutely everything. And yet, if you go to flight schools around the country, you don't see people using them because they simply are too big. They don't work. So you need a smaller version of that, a pre-flight, other things for that. I think Greg can talk about that as well because I stole that from him some years ago. Go ahead, whatever you want to talk about, Greg, but that's one of the things I think you'd be good at. Hey, oh, your audio's off.
Yep.
There you go. We got you.
Funny you should say that. You know, Mike, you and I have a lot in common in how we approach this stuff because I've just made a note to talk about that, keying off what you've said. There's a few things I want to key off of here on everyone else's good points. We've entered an era where communication, interpersonal communication, is diminished. And this is a problem that we face in many parts of society. But the interpersonal communication between you and your student is one thing, and I'll comment on that in a sec here, but also the communication that we have as peers. So all of you who are here today, you're making an effort to get points of view from other people and broaden yourself, get inspiration, and we need that. And we're in a time where a lot of people are working in isolation. And one of the funny things is, years and years ago, when I wrote the first edition of Savvy Flight Instructor, it's because the first forums had started on AOL, and I hosted a couple of them. And I learned so much by asking the questions of people and finding out, you know, because people were all training in different isolated parts of the country and so on. They didn't know anyone else was taking lessons in many cases. And so they didn't have any support network and they didn't have any information mechanism. And I see us going back that way again right now because of the nature of technology and social media. Anyway, so Mike mentioned the one size fits all thing. When you get a new student coming in, you want to ask them a number of questions for. You want to ask them, hey, what do you plan to do with your flying? You know, you plan to be an airline pilot or you want to take your kids to the lake? You want to fly for business? Because you're going to teach differently the person who wants to be an airline pilot versus the person who wants to fly to the lake. So you got to ask those questions. The other reason that's important is you don't want them to quietly sit there and learn. You want them to ask you questions when they have them. So you want to open up that line of communications. So asking your students, and then this ties in with what Dorothy said in terms of bringing up things like asking them about if you're in a Part 61 environment, pay as you go. Hey, let's talk about costs a little bit and make sure you got enough money planned for cash flow to finish this thing. Right? Some of your students, you might say, you know what? Why don't you wait 3 months, save up a certain amount of money so you won't get interrupted in the middle of your training and you'll save money in the long run and get better training as a result of it. The syllabus thing is really, I agree with everyone that it's critical. And I was really lucky when I first got my CFI. I taught in a 141 school. So I taught by syllabus. It was not an academy. It was still a private operation, a smaller flight school with probably half a dozen airplanes, but we were 141 approved and we used a syllabus. Well, as a new CFI, that was critical for my development. Because once you've taught by the syllabus for a while, then you do develop more flexibility to modify the syllabus to meet the students' needs. But if you've never taught by a syllabus before, you got a problem. So it's absolutely critical as a new CFI, if you're not in an environment where you are required to use a syllabus, that you find one you like and you use it. And yes, you can modify it if you need to, especially, if you're outside 141 formal environment, but it gets you on the path of this is the sequence of events that are going to occur. You'll give better lessons, and then you can be more flexible the more experience you have. Another thing I want to mention has to do with the teaching style thing that Mike said. Most of you who are watching today have taught something. You might have taught something in sports. It seems like a fair number of people who come into flying have some background in teaching outdoor activities or medical stuff. But almost everyone has taught something, and you've developed a teaching style if you have. And to me, one of the big flaws in the current CFI preparation materials, as you all know, we're bombarded with these outlines of everything. And if you're like me, I can't remember my name or where my coffee cup is. I mean, for me, trying to memorize all that crap, excuse the expression, is difficult. Now, I'm not saying it's not important, but I am saying that when it comes down to the actual teaching, it's your game. And if you go into your check ride and teach it in your own way, the way you like to teach, and you have the accurate information and it's presented well, you're going to do fine. And more importantly, you're going to do much better teaching your students if you teach it your way. So I can't emphasize that enough, that despite the fact that we feel like we're being channeled into this narrow thing here, we all have lots of questions about CFI training. How to teach, lean back towards some teaching you've done yourself on anything, and think about what your style is, and have some fun applying your style to your CFI, to your flight instruction. And one last thing I'll say.
A
Pardon?
question in the chat that came up that actually really applies to what you're talking about here, and it says, "Sorry, I just got another one scrolled down." So it says, "Why are we training the person who wants to fly the lake any different from the person who is a professional pilot? Everyone has to meet the standard." And I think that there's some conversation to have around there about motivation and that interpersonal connection that you kind of brought up, and maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, we all have to meet the standards. So I'm not saying we shouldn't. But I'm saying we can tailor the lessons to a degree based on what the student's interest is. So, for example, if you get a student whose goal is to fly for fun, you might pick some destinations and some missions that would correspond to what they see themselves doing. Versus someone who's headed on the airline track, I think requires a more formal approach in teaching with more of a systematic approach. The standards are the same, the performance has to be the same. The question is, can we inspire them to that great performance by relating to what they want to do? So let's say I have a student who wants to be an airline pilot. Well, that's a multi-pilot crew type thing. I'm going to be talking to them some about it, where it fits in. You know, when you're an airline pilot, then, you know, this will happen, that will happen, and you'll fly in a very system checklists, right? If someone's going to be an airline pilot, you want to be really formal about the checklists. Now, someone who's going to fly for pleasure, they still need to use the same checklist. They still need to use it well. But your discussion with them might be different. So I think a lot of it has to do with relating to the student, not with the standard.
I
That's a
think,
great question. I mean, it really
yeah,
is.
that's a good one. I saw it in there too. The one thing I would say about the one of the differences I think for me would be when I first started to go get type-rated, it was very challenging. It was really difficult, and the time was compressed because there's only a lot of these companies were paying people for the types and paying them to be there, like NetJets and other people. So they wanted the compression of that to be as but so you have to kind of know that going into the airline world or corporate world and say, if I don't pick this stuff up pretty quickly, this may not be for me, right? It may be a point where you say, well, this is kind of the reality of the world. You know, it took you 185 hours to get your private pilot certificate. You know, that might be looked on very favorably. There may be good reasons for it or not, but I find that. What was, you had one more point, Greg, you were going to go over.
Well,
It was on, you had on your notes.
social media, with all its faults, flaws, and liabilities, it opens up communication, especially for those of us who are in an environment where we're not able to talk directly to a lot of people. So for I think good flight schools have social activities. I mean, I love the flight schools that have a barbecue once a month and that sort of thing. So your students get together and they're talking to each other and saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't feel bad. You shouldn't give up because you're not making good landings after 7 hours. It took me 20 or it took me 30. But we all need that support network for encouragement and to share information. The same thing's true with CFIs. And in flight schools, where organized flight schools, I really believe there should be a weekly CFI meeting. I've said this lots of times before, where the CFIs all get together, whether they're new or very seasoned, and they discuss the progress of their students. And it's not so much that the progress has to be discussed per se, but it gives a reason for people to talk about their challenges and learn some tips and get some support. You know, how do I handle this? I've got a student who just cannot get comfortable with stalls. What should I do? Well, figuring that out yourself is sometimes impossible. Social media, in particular Facebook, with all its faults, allows dialogue with inputs from lots of people. And it is a less desirable than straight there in person, but it's still worth joining and being, you know, be selective about the groups you're in. You don't have to join the political groups or the other ones where there's reason to not be in them. But if you're trying to do this by yourself without a support network, if you're trying to teach by yourself or you're trying to learn by yourself without a support network, this is hard stuff. You got one hell of a challenge to master it without a support group. That's my other point.
Yeah, okay, that's good. So let me we I was thinking about one sort of big just one piece of advice. That's a lot we talked about there, but what would I say could help with any of this? Well, teaching practice, as you said, you've probably taught something in your life before, but even if you haven't, I would recommend that you immediately, whatever stage of training you're at, whether you're a private pilot, beginning to work on the CFI, whatever it is, to get your advanced ground instructor certificate. Because that does a couple things. Number one is it gives you the opportunity to teach ground instruction. Maybe you don't get paid a lot for it, or maybe nothing for it, or whatever, but it gives you teaching practice. And when you get to that point in the training and the testing, it goes a lot better because you've already seen that head, the people when they don't understand, they go, look at you like, what? Or like, is this just me? Or you sort of get through that a little bit. Plus, it starts the clock running on your ability to train initial CFIs because you have to have held a AGI or CFI for one of the for ground for at least 2 years and given 40 hours or been in a 141 school teaching under 141 for 100 hours. So it kind of gets that process started and it gives you the opportunity to do it and team up with other CFIs or schools that would let you teach such things, right? And that could be helpful because teaching practice is really, really valuable. So that's what I would say. Now, I was thinking about, so I would say to do that as soon as you can. And if you're taking, you're going to be a flight instructor and you're going to do it within 2 years, those tests, the FIA and the AGI test, are very almost identical. There's extra questions in the AGI about different categories, about they'll ask questions about balloons or gliders or maybe five. Because you're allowed to endorse for to recommend a person for any of those categories once you're an AGI. You can't do that with your CFI. So maybe just to change gears for a second and give the people who aren't CFIs in the room something. So last 2 weeks ago we had Rod Machado on who did 52 years of teaching landings, and here's what I kind of learned. And he had a lot of really good things to say, and I thought it was a very interesting presentation. I took a lot away from that. So some of it I knew, some of it because you've nearly crashed trying to fix students' problems. Or oh, geez, that was a disaster. There's an adage we have in aviation. It's pretty funny. Most people don't know it, but for every 1,000 hours of instruction in the airplane you've given, you get to look 2 extra seconds into the future. Right, so basically you can see the train wreck coming, but in the beginning you don't have 2 seconds, you got no seconds, right? So yeah, but so most of us can look in the future and go like, well, this is going to not work out too well probably, right? That, but I think people come into, here's what I see in terms of just private pilots. So people who have no really clue, isn't that funny that we have all this internet stuff, all these websites, and yet people come in and they have expectations for the private pilot that maybe aren't grounded in reality. There's all this information like, well, I just need to collect hours. I need to somehow log 40 hours in. I don't know. They send me a pilot certificate or something. I have people who have said that. I had one girl who came into the school who was 50, and she said that she wanted to fly freight, and she had saved up the money to do training. And would that be realistic that she could fly freight? I said, it's a possibility. I mean, yeah, it's possible. And so she didn't say, and then she said, well, I said, why do you want to do it? Because again, motivation. And she said, well, because they make a lot of money. And he said, I said, well, who do you want to work for? She goes, UPS or FedEx. And I'm like, okay, now it's getting a little less realistic. And she says, well, I just need this pilot certificate. And once I have it, I've already saved $18,000. Once I have it, then I can go to work for them and make $300,000, $400,000. I had to tell her there was more to it than just a private pilot certificate. There's not just a pilot certificate. So people come in with, and so when sometimes when they come in, the reason for telling you that, not that it was funny too, but it's that when they come in, I want to know what they want it for. I mean, like I really want to understand what you want it for. Sometimes it's just a bucket list item. They don't even know it. They say, I want to get this private pilot certificate, and then once the reality of what has to be done to get certificated comes in, like there's tests, there's this stuff. Then they're like, well, I really just wanted to be able to land an airplane. It's really what I wanted to do, right? And then it stops there. It could. So what I'm looking at in this particular segment for maybe 10 minutes is to say, what could we tell people coming into the school for private pilot? What could we do to help them? Like a question or I think my side would be to say, why do you want to be a private pilot? What's the reason? What's something else do? And one further thing, just wise, it's a little off topic, but I think people should become sport pilot flight instructors. I think if you do that, You can do that at 150 hours. And if a school lets you fly, now you can fly 172s and such. By the time you get to your CFI, you're going to do your regular CFI, you've got a lot of teaching experience. And then, so you could take it in phases where you do, okay, I do student pilot training first, which I can do all the way through solo and through cross country training. I can do that as a sport pilot instructor. And then I can add the other thing on later. And that then the FOI has more merit, has more value at that particular point when you can open up your horizon. So anyway, for the private pilot student, I would say to know why you want to do this, and also to know this. This is a tough one because flight schools aren't going to tell you this. What's the cost of training? That's one thing, but you have to ask, what are the running costs? What after I get certificated, how much is it going to cost me afterwards? And that number is bigger than the number of training usually. Over your lifetime, it will be. So, like we had a one guy, his name was Fred. His wife didn't really want to fly with him that much. She would go, and so he said, "How much is going to be?" Okay, it's going to be $18,000. Okay, $18,000. And then after it's done, she like, "Well, why is there every month like another $1,000 being paid out?" Well, that's so I can stay current, so I can do this, so I can do that. And so she bought a horse. And did equestrian riding classes, right? So I was like, that's not doing nothing for me. So the running costs can be high. So I think those are kind of things. What would you say, Dorothy, that you would, as a flight school owner you had, what would you say as a tip or advice to people coming in?
Right, great. And first of all, I totally agree with everything you've just said. And one of the things I used to ask a lot of questions, right? Like you say, what are the reasons you're coming in today? Did you have a pilot in your family? Did you fly before with your family or not? And then how much time do you have? Now, in our case, we had some professionals coming in, many, lawyers, doctors, so on, or people who had reached a certain age and their kids had gone off and they now had free time to spend. And the question most people don't understand is how much time, perseverance, and grit. This is not like once you've learned to ride a bicycle, you can get on the bicycle anytime. So I would ask that question, how much time? And we would look at a calendar like, okay, can you go two times a week? Well, I've got this and this and this. I got my golf game on this day. Well, how much time can you study? Study? I'd get this like, look, I haven't studied since high school or college. So it's a process of introducing the concept that this is not just it's fun. It can be fun. Or if it's a profession someone's going towards, this is going to be a serious endeavor that you're going to have to put, a lot of effort into. So in my case, it was a lot of handholding in terms of deciding, okay, let's look at this time frame. And in the Pacific Northwest, it also has to do with the weather. Educating someone that you're not going to be able to just take off on a, if I'm looking outside today, you're not going to be taken off today and going anywhere because it's like zero visibility. And they don't understand that, right? They get in a car and they can drive, no problem. So there's some part of that, which is the education and not being negative about it, but being positive about it. Oh, okay, well, look, we're going to be able to spend this amount of time. It may take you longer. It may not, but it may take you longer to complete your training because it's, you might say, have you studied piano? Did you take piano lessons? Well, what happened when you skipped a piano lesson? Or what happened when you skipped a lesson or your language lesson? If you're not studying it, you're not in it to win it. So those are things that I tried to do to talk about reality of it in a way that would help them understand, hey, we can do this. Partially, it's also their accountability, right? It's for the student to say, and this answers one of the questions that came up in the chat. It's like, hey, commercial level and private pilot level, and I get to my CFI, and all of a sudden I should have learned all this stuff before, and I haven't learned it. Well, there's a certain amount of accountability that a CFI has to you to teach you this information, but it's also you as a learner being willing and able to dig in and look at the information. So it's a two-way street a little bit. So the instructor needs to be able to not have shortcuts and be able to give you the knowledge, but it's also you have to take that and run with it. Does that make sense?
Yep, that's a good one. Yeah, some people put the big thumbs up going across the screen. That's good. All right, Rex, what do you think?
I really like what Dorothy said. I call it taking PIC authority of your training, as what I call it. So I really like what she had to say there. And part of that, going just kind of tying us back together, we're kind of go to some correlative knowledge where we're kind of tying things back together. But you know, if we talk about the syllabus and we talk about the documents and we talk about the standardization and we talk about the ACS, showing them how to utilize all those documents, showing them what their progress is, and having that personal accountability of, hey, this is a partnership. I can show up and I can do what I'm supposed to do, and this is kind of my duties and my responsibilities, what I'm supposed to do, and then this is what you're supposed to do. Now, if we don't meet our goal, we don't meet it together. But let's look at, you know, what am I supposed to provide? What are you supposed to provide? If I'm showing up every day and I'm showing up with a lesson plan ready to roll, and my student, you know, hasn't done their homework and stuff like that, you know, we need to sit down, address that with your students, and say, hey, you had homework you were going to do. We're not going to be able to meet your goals in time or money. If I can't believe this, and you guys all probably have these experiences too, where you'll have a student who's, you know, spending $600 a flight or something with you, and they show up and they haven't thought about it since the last time they flew with you, you know, and so having those conversations, like Dorothy's saying, is great. And I think Greg was also talking about this too. This is that interpersonal communication of talking about, you know, what is your background? What is your motivation? So talking about someone, and yes, we all have to train them to the standard, but people aren't cookie cutters. We're human, and we need to kind of have that human aspect in the training process of, you know, who's important to you? Why do you want to go fly? You know, is it important to you to when you know, one of my students, for example, you know, he was going to fly his wife and he wasn't really meeting the standard. And then we kind of talked about, you know, him flying his wife and how important that was and how important that, you know, they didn't leave their kids behind without parents and things like that, really got him to kick in and get motivated. So having these kind of interpersonal conversations, discovering who the person is, and discovering what motivates them and how you can get them to the standard, as kind of Greg was saying, I think is really important to do.
Yeah. What do you think, Greg?
Well, I think it's all been said on this wonderfully by everyone. The people we all have had mentors in life who were someone special to us in some field. Those teachers, that one or two teachers in high school, maybe even that, you know, decades later we look back and say, boy, did that woman or that man do something for me? And to be a great flight instructor is to be like that. I mean, I've been doing this, I'm embarrassed to say, so long that I have flight students that from way back that have retired from the airlines. And to have them come up and say, you know, Greg, I learned some stuff from you 40 years ago or whatever that made me a better pilot or improved my career. So we all want to be that caliber of mentor. And those of us who are older, Mike, I know you're certainly old enough and have been around enough to know what the thrill of realizing that someone you taught, someone you gave a check ride to, whatever, got something lifelong out of that hour or two they spent with you or those hours. And that's all built on developing the communications with your students, being honest with them, having trust, and encouraging them, as Rex said, to be PIC of the process and in the airplane. And that's fun. It's fun to do that stuff. If you don't engage with people, it's much harder to give them good training. And frankly, you will get less out of it yourself, not to mention the student suffering.
Yeah, there's a question in the chat, and not question, it's a comment, which I think is pretty good. It's from New Mexico. It says, not a CFI, but got my private pilot in July, having worked with two very different schools and nine different instructors. It says, my main instructor had very poor interpersonal skills and slowed my process because of lack of positive feedback and no relationship. I think instructors need to be observed and coached on how to connect with the student. Just having your CFI does not mean you're a good teacher. That come does come right into the idea of, why do you want to be a CFI? And in 80% of those cases, it's going to be so I can do the next thing. I got my eye on the shiny jet, and this is the fastest way to Jesus right here, right? This is it. This is it. And so that's the way I get there the fastest. And so then at sometimes people just don't care. And if you're an academy, you may happen to get a CFI just like that. Or you may not. You may get the other extreme, right? You may get someone who really likes it or whatever. But that's why I would be seeking out an instructor for myself as a private pilot, someone looking to be a private pilot, who does, if you can, for a living. Now, you're going to pay more for that. That's true. But I've shown you before in various presentations that sometimes the hourly rate isn't as significant to the overall cost of training as you would think. The airplane is the biggest piece because if I'm able to finish you sooner than a brand new CFI, right? And my delta in terms of price, let's just say, would be about $40 or $50 an hour. That'd be more expensive for me. But when I'm done with you, the clock is stopped. Now, if you're on with the other CFI, you're paying for the airplane and their full rate, right? And that doesn't take very long to eat into that. So sometimes, yeah, you have a comment, Greg. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to build on that because I think that's such a great observation. Think about an auto mechanic. You take your car in and you got a problem. And the one mechanic charges $100 an hour but can figure it out in 5 minutes what's wrong. And the other mechanic charges $10 an hour, but it takes them 100 hours to figure out what's wrong. And this is it's just exactly what you're saying, Mike, phrased in a different way, but it is so true in aviation. It's all about identifying, being able to troubleshoot and then being able to provide for that particular person the tricks or the perspective that will allow them to solve it. So going with the best is never a mistake if you have a good relationship. Now, it should be said, you might find the $10 an hour instructor that's that good. So you got to interview people, and there might be a $100 an hour instructor that you don't get that out of. So you got to do the interviewing as a student. But boy, oh boy, is that true. If you get the experienced person who can, I should say, the one who's a great diagnostician, regardless of experience, and can apply that to your personal situation, wow. Now you got someone who's going to move you through quickly. You're going to learn more. You're going to have more fun, and you're going to feel better about yourself.
You bet. Just so when I was thinking about one, so what's important is you know that you're a good fit for your instructor because as you become with them, even if they're bad, it's really difficult to tell them you don't want to fly with them anymore. It's really difficult. And so then you're in that position where, man, if I would have done this, it would have been a lot easier. So, okay, Dorothy, you wanted to say something.
Really, there are just two points. One, Mike, that you mentioned is the concept, and Greg and Rex both, is the long-term, wonderful relationships you can make with people. I got an email not too long ago from a guy that I taught. He was in his 20s. He went on to the National Guard, flying F-15s, right? And I get this message, hey, I never realized how much you did for me as a CFI, right? Until I had to be an instructor in the F-15s. So I'm like, hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate that. It took years for him to get back to me, but okay, I appreciate that. But again, getting someone coming back in and saying, hey, really appreciate what you did. I didn't realize what was going on. Those kind of messages are so heartwarming, right? We live for those sometimes. I guess if you're a compassionate and loving CFI, you try to do that. The other change I think that we've seen in our industry is how many CFIs a person goes through in many cases to get to where they're going. And the Greg's Facebook group, you see that all the time. You see it in the student pilot over 50 group. They've gone through eight instructors. That's a lot of people
A
to go
lot.
through. Now, it's not only sometimes it's good to have that many, but it's also a change in perspective of that each time you go through another instructor, you're spending more time and money.
Yep, you betcha. I don't want to run out of time to let you have a, but we can go on after. But Greg, tell us a little bit about what you do, and then someone would know if that's Flagstaff in the background. And so to sort of put out your plug for whatever you want there. Not even a plug, but I know you have a lot of irons in the fire. It's good.
Well, this is Flagstaff behind me, and a special place to fly out if you certainly learn about density altitude here, since the field elevation is 7,000 feet. Well, some of you will know my book, The Savvy Flight Instructor, and I've written a few books. Turbine Pilot's Flight Manual is what got me started with writing, and we're in the fifth edition of it. And then I also have a GA Adventures book that's a memoir, really, which is Flying Carpet, The Soul of an Airplane. And by the way, that is going out of print. So those of you who are thinking about getting one, you should do it soon. I'm real proud of that book. And then I have a podcast also called Flying Carpet, and it's on all the usual platforms. So I think you'd enjoy that. But something that I think figures into all of what we've just been discussing is this. I've had the pleasure, the joy, and some scares flying myself, my family around, flying for business, with business corporate pilot. I flew airlines for a while. But I've had the pleasure of doing a lot of flying on my own. And that has made me a far better instructor, I believe, than if I had only been a CFI. And so a message for all of you folks, if you're a person who's been flying for a number of years, you're just now getting your CFI, you're going to be a terrific instructor because you have real world experience and you have inspiration you can share in addition to experience.
Got it.
If you're a person who's in an academy environment, they have their own set of pluses, right? That you tend to get a quality education there that is truly based on syllabus, and you don't have usually holes in the training, which can happen in Part 61. But you have to go out there and have some fun with this if you want to be a great CFI and if you want to look back at your life later and remember some fun things. So if you're in an environment where you're not getting to do any personal flying, go to somewhere where you can rent a plane, check out, fly somewhere to go skiing, take your girlfriend or your boyfriend flying, team up with your friends to go to a concert in another city, but get out there and do some flying yourself and have some fun. And it'll add to the richness and the quality of your teaching like you won't believe.
Great. Dorothy, what did you want to say about anything? Say Facebook study group or anything you want to say? We just got a few minutes left, so.
Thanks a lot. Rex and I both started CFI study group. Rex has gone on to do a lot of things. And by the way, Rex, can I contact you? I got a friend stuck in Richfield. And he's got some questions. I think it's partly, I've been a CFI. I chose that as my occupation, partly because of family situation, and so I didn't go on the airlines, and it's just been the most rewarding career. It's not for everybody, and starting your own business is not for everybody, but I would highly recommend that if this is a passion, you like teaching, that you stay with it. And even if you go on to the airlines or other Part 135, that you do your CFI and you use it, because it's the most rewarding career, I think, in my opinion. So that's my motivation statement for all of you out there. Stick
Great.
with it.
And
Enjoy it.
join the CFI study group on Facebook. There you go. Rex, we got about a minute for you, and then I
Okay.
got to close it out. What did you
All
say?
right.
What do
Yeah,
you?
no worries. If you're interested in contacting me or talking to me, you can email me. My email is rexthecfi@gmail.com.
You can put it in the chat.
REXTHECFI. Oh, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. Anything you want to put in the chat's fine for all of you. We'll keep it
Very good.
open.
Yeah, so I do. Oops, I think I got a space in there. But I do tailwheel and backcountry instruction here in Utah, glider instruction, that kind of stuff. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be on with all these guys. I've spent quite a bit of time with all these guys. They're all really great mentors. Find yourself a good mentor. And I think the kind of the summary that I would say of this whole meeting is about personal relationships. So learn how to be a mentor towards people, learn how to find mentors, learn how to plug yourself into a community and kind of be a part of all of that. That would be my recommendation. That will help you. So we talked about relationships. 80% of people quit before they make it. And so part of what's going to help you keep this, Dorothy mentioned it very well. Thought I wrote it down, but it was like grit, determination, those kind of things. Those personal relationships, that and that personal motivation, and having other people understand you and being able to be there for you in your time of need, that's critical to your success. So make sure that you're building genuine and authentic, deep relationships in your process.
Very good. Excellent. All good advice. So, yeah, we're kind of near the end. So, what I'm going to do is in a second, I will close everything down and then I'll keep the room open. So, anybody who wants to stay around, if you can, if stay around. If you don't want to, that's okay too. And then I can answer some questions for a while. Other people can answer some questions for a while. And just see how that moves on. I wanted to thank Dorothy and Greg Brown and Rex for showing up today. I thought we had a good discussion. I didn't have any particular agenda because it's just, and when you have a lot of people with a lot of experience with experience, you really don't need that. You can just speak from what happened to you and what you saw. And Dorothy was a flight school owner. That's good. And Greg, he's got a lot of good experience as an author and wrote a lot of materials. And so, I know Rex really well as well. So if you want someone to listen to your lessons, he's the guy. He doesn't hold back what I heard. There's that, right? So, and thank everybody else for showing up. I hope you found it useful. We'll be back again next week. I forgot the topic. I think it's something about becoming a professional pilot. So that would be very interesting to say. What does that mean? That means it's gonna. It, that means that, what does it mean? It means that we're going to talk about like how to get through training and setting expectations about what your life is going to be like as a professional pilot. So we'll talk about that as well. The good, bad, the ugly, and all of it next week.
Bootcamp in Miami Beach, Florida. This is the Power Hour. Welcome.